Okay, so we're up to Perek Tesvav in Yehoshua. As you saw from the title, I wrote 15 through 19. So I don't think, I think I was maybe a little overambitious. I'm not sure if we'll get through four Prakim tonight, but I think three Prakim will probably get through tonight. The reason being because most of the next few Prakim, most of the Perek, most of these Prakim deal with, the division of land and a lot of physical land boundaries and, which Shevet got this area and this town and that town and this, region and that region. And it's, although it's certainly Torah and it's part of Nach, but it's, to read through them, I think will be a little bit tough for us, especially at 9 o'clock at night, going through the, all the details. So I'll leave that to you for homework, so to speak. You can do that on your own, and we'll pick out some psukim within these prakim that I think are a little bit more engaging for us, and then we'll do it like that. So if you look at the beginning of Perek Tesvav, so it really talks all about Yehuda's territory, the territory that Yehuda was given, and let's fast forward. And I want to talk a little bit about Pasuk Yud Gimel, beginning from Pasuk Yud Gimel. So until Pasuk Yud Gimel is really just listing different boundaries and borders. And Pasuk Yud Gimel is an interesting, a little bit of an interesting storyline here. So Pasuk Yud Gimel, the Navi tells us, Ula Kalev ben Yefune, Nasan Chelek Besoch b'nei Yehuda. So Kalev ben Yefune, we know Kalev was from Shevet Yehuda. And Kalev ben Yefune was given a Chelek within the territory of the b'nei Yehuda. El Pi Hashem. Based on Hashem's command, Al pi Hashem liYoshua. I'm sorry. Based on Hashem's command to Yoshua, Eis Kiryas Arba Avi HaAnak Hi Chevron. He was given Chevron, and this is what we talked about last week. We didn't have a shir, but 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, I think it was Chanukah, right? Was it? Yeah. So whatever it was, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about Kalev, and Kalev got Chevron. Which parts of Chevron? We talked about this at length, why it was called Kiryat Arba and Chevron, the different names. We spoke about that previously. It's very interesting. Just a Malbim, as usual, Kedar Kova Kodesh picks up on the linguistic subtleties in the Pasuk. So here, we have an expression in this Pasuk which seems similar at first glance, but really is very different. It says, El Pi Hashem LiYoshua. So what we're used to seeing is Al Pi Hashem, right? Based on the command of Hashem. Here we have El Pi Hashem. Now usually El means to, but to the Pi Hashem doesn't really make sense. So the Malbim says that really the intention of both Al Pi Hashem and El Pi Hashem is the same, that it means based on Hashem's command, in this case to Yehoshua. And he says the discrepancy is that Al Pi is always a new command. El Pi is always referring to an old command. So since here, this was something that was given to Yehoshua, but it was really given already from the times of Moshe. If you remember, this was a promise made that Moshe made from Hashem to Kalev, that he would get Chevron as a reward for his dedication to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and giving a good report about Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, that's why the Navi uses the terminology of El Pi Hashem to indicate that this is really an old promise. This is not a new promise. This is an old promise that Hashem made through Moshe, down to Yehoshua, and finally it's being fulfilled at this point that Kalev is getting this territory of Chevron. Okay, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayoresh misham Kalev es shlosha b'nei ha'anak, es sheishai ves achiman ves talma yilidei ha'anak. So Kalev defeats the three giants, right? The sons of the giant, Sheshai, Achiman, and Talmai. These were the three sons, and their father was also a giant. That's why we saw one of the opinions says that's why it was called Kiryat Arba, that this was the four, right? The four was the father and the three sons. So that's why some suggest that it was called Kiryat Arba for that purpose. There is a machlokas Rishonim here between the Rashi and the Malbim. When exactly did this conquest happen? So it sounds like Kalev is doing this right now. So Rashi says that that's not the case. The Malbim understands that, yes, it's happening right now, the way that the Pasuk sounds. And Rashi seems to indicate that this conquest actually didn't take place until after Yehoshua died. He says, if you look at Sefer Shoftim, and this is a little bit beyond us right now, but he says, if you look at Sefer Shoftim, it seems clear that this only happened after Yehoshua's death. And it's being recorded here, it's mentioned here, because we're talking about the division of the land, and we're talking about what Kalev got. So we also mention the fact that Kalev defeated these giants in order to gain this territory, but in reality it did not happen here. So this is Machlokas Rishonim, whether this did take place right now, or this is just recording a future event that's going to happen later, but now that we're discussing the division of the land, so we mention it here.
Was the father of the three Anakim, was that Chevron? Was that his name?
No, it's actually a question what his name is. Some say his name was Arba, and that's why it's called Kiryat Arba. Well, it just calls him the giant. Right? Yelidei Ha'anak. That they were the children of the giant.
And
Yudalid. Yudalid. Kiryat Arba Avi Ha'anak Hi Chevron. Right.
Yud Gimel,
right. Kiryat Arba Avi Ha'anak Hi Chevron. I'm trying
to.
Yeah. Well, no. It is talking about the city. It's saying the city is called Chevron. Why it says Aviha Anak? I don't remember. Let me just look quickly. I have a couple of mafarshim here. Yeah. So the Mitzudas David here says Aviha Anak. He says, yeah, those of you who have the sefer in front of you, Ratzalomar. Arba Haya Aviha Anak. The father of the Anak was named Arba. That was the father's name. Ratzalomar Hagadol Shaba Anakim. He was the greatest of the giants. So he was named. Anak Aviha Anak really means the Aviha Anakim. That's what it sounds like here. It's the father of the giants. You have these three giants and then their father. Yeah. Or what's the question?
Did we learn a couple of Barakov ago that. That he went and he captured it. When we were going through all those
captures, yes, yeah.
We learned that he went and he captured Hebron, didn't he?
Well, earlier, if I'm not mistaken, right.
Was that time when it
right.
The Psukim were actually saying they were going through different conquests.
Right.
And it said that I believe at least
yeah.
It could be wrong.
Yeah. Let me look back. If I'm not mistaken, I think it said over there that it was. Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Yud Gimel.
No, it's way before that.
Well, that's where he gave it to him, right? Vayivarcheu Yoshua vayiten es chevron lekalev ben yifunu lenachala. Al kein haisa chevron lekalev ben yifunu haknizi lenachala. Right, that's what we discussed, the names. But I do recall, I think also there was something earlier. If I'm not mistaken, I thought
when
that...
When they were talking about one conquest after the other, they went to different cities, one after
and they talked about Chevron also, right?
Right, if I remember correctly.
Hold on a second.
So it sounds like it was captured already.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So this was back in Perek Yud, Pasuk Lamed Vav. So there it says, Vayal Yehoshua v'chol Yisrael imo me'eglona chevrona. Maybe this is what everyone's referring to. Vayilachamu aleha, they fought against Chevron. Vayil Kiduha. Right, they captured it. Vayaku al ficher, ve'es malka, ve'es kol areha, ve'es kol ha'nefesh ha'sheba. Lo yishir sarid b'chol ha'asher asol le'eglon. So if I'm not mistaken, I have to look back on my notes. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that what the Mefarshim discussed here is that how come here when it talks about Vayil Keduha Vayaku Alafi Cheref, right, that they're defeating Chevron, how come we don't mention Kalev's name? If Kalev was the one here later in Perek Tesvav, it's very clear that Kalev is the one who defeats Chevron, right? And yet here in Perek Yud, it only mentions Yehoshua.
We don't mention giants either.
I'm sorry? That's also true,
but
right?
They say they captured it.
They say they captured it, right? So I think all the Mefarshim understand that in Perek Yud we're referring to the later conquest, and they're bothered that how can we only talk about Yehoshua not Kalev? And I think there's a question that either Kalev really did it, but it calls it under the name of Yehoshua because Yehoshua was the general, right? something like that. I think that was one of the interpretations, but I think everyone agrees that that it didn't happen right then. What is this, Lamed Vav?
Isn't it referring to the outer territory?
Well, that's what was given to Kalev, we said. We said that had to be because Chevron was really one of the Ari Leviyah. So he got the outer territories, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, he gave it to him, but that doesn't mean that he conquered it yet. He gave it to him. That's what we said in general in Sefer Yehoshua. When Yehoshua divided the land among the Shvatim, they didn't all own the land yet. They hadn't conquered all the land yet. They divided the land even before it was conquered. And then we said it was the job of the Shvatim to go ahead and to actually, each Shevet had to go and conquer its land that it was given. Well, that's how it was divided. That's how it was divided. Right. Yeah.
So that's pretty unfair. The conquests that happened before this, whichever Shvatim got those,
right?
Everybody fought for them, and then the rest of whoever was left had to go fight.
Well, in the beginning, everybody fights. In the beginning, everybody fights, right? But then, as soon as the Bnei Yisrael have enough of a stronghold in Eretz Yisrael, that now they say, okay, you know, not everybody has to fight anymore. We have enough of a presence here. We could just send the individual armies to conquer their own individual lands. But yeah, you're right. I mean, in the beginning, they needed that because the Goyim were resisting more. You know, at this point, I guess later it was probably easier because they recognized the might of the Jewish army.
But the Shvatim that were Eber Ayade still were fighting because they guaranteed they'd fight to the end.
Right.
So they were fighting with everybody anyway.
Yeah.
14
correct.
Years, I think.
Right. Well, it was 7 years of conquest and 7 years of division, but the years of division also they were still fighting at some point. We're going to see later in Perek Yud Ches. We'll get to later. Yehoshua kind of chastises some of the Shvatim that hadn't conquered their land yet, and he says, okay, you know, time to get going.
It's possible you're talking about Chevron and Perek Tedvav. They're talking about Kiryat Arba, which is a part of Chevron. Maybe Kalev only defeated.
Today I think there are two neighborhoods today, right? I think today, you know, in modern day Israel, we have Hebron is one city, and then Kiryat Arba is like a suburb of Hebron. It's clear in the Navi that it's referring to the same place, that Hebron and Kiryat Arba are the same, because if you look at the end of Perek Yudalev, v'shem Hebron lefanim Kiryat Arba, right? The earlier name of Hebron was Kiryat Arba. They were one and the same. Now we've divided them into a city and a satellite suburb, you know.
Rabbi, it said that Caleb conquered Hebron,
right,
and all the villages around Hebron.
Right. Yeah, so, and that's what he got, really. He really got the areas around Hebron, yeah. Okay. So let's look at Pasuk Tesvav. Okay, so now Hebron is now conquered. Okay, and again, whether it happened now or it really happened later, whatever it is, but it's done. And now, Pasuk Tesvav, Vayal Misham El Yoshve Devir. So now they move up from Hebron to this place called Devir. V'shem Devir Lefanim Kiryat Sefer. And the earlier name of Devir is Kiryat Sefer. Now Kiryat Sefer is a city in Israel today, right? I think not far from Modi'in, if I'm not mistaken. Right? It's a Haredi city not far from Modi'in. Kiryat Sefer. And so here, this is where they go next to conquer. Very interesting. Let's read a couple of psukim, and then we'll talk about how the mafashim understand these psukim. Pasuk Tes Zayin, Vayomer Kalev. Now Kalev makes a proclamation. Now Kalev is like leading the charge here, right? He's leading the charge, and you know, he just defeated Hebron. Now he's moving to Devir, which is near Hebron. Asher Yakez Kiryat Sefer. The one who defeats Kiryat Sefer, Ulechada, and conquers it, V'nasati lo es achsa biti leisha. I'm going to give them achsa, my daughter, as a wife. Right? I'm going to give them achsa, my daughter, as a wife. Okay? So, pashup shat, it would seem that this was a very difficult place to conquer. Right? That's what the pashup shat seems to be. that it's a very difficult place to conquer. So therefore, you know, Kalev realized that he needed to give people a little motivation. You know, the best soldiers, a little motivation to like lead the charge here. So what's a better motivation than marrying the general's daughter? Right? Kalev was the general. He was a tzaddik. You know, so, marry Kalev's daughter. What a great shidduch. So all I have to do is defeat Kiryat Sefer, defeat Devir. Sure. So that's the pashup shot that what seems to be going on here. And then we'll see how Chazal understand this as well. So Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayil Kida Osniel Ben Kenaz. So Osniel Ben Kenaz, which is a name that also comes up in Shoftim, right? He was one of the Shoftim. So, maybe if we learn Shoftim, we'll get him later. But Osniel Ben Kenaz, Achi Kalev. Pasuk says he was the brother of Kalev. We'll talk about this in a minute. So he decides, you know what? I'm going to do it. He goes up and he defeats the city of Devir Kiryat Sefer. So Kalev makes good on his promise and he gives him his daughter Achsa as a wife. Okay? Very interesting story. So Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayhi Bivoa. So as she was coming, I guess to get married perhaps to Osniel, Vatisisehu Lishol Me Esaviha Sodeh. So she kind of turns, you know, and she takes a detour because she wants a field from her father. She's getting married. She wants a piece of land. She wants a piece of property from her father. Vatitznach me'al ha'chamor. So she comes down. She descends from the camel, from the donkey, I'm sorry. Vayomer la Kalev malach. Kalev says to her, you know, what can I do for you, honey? How can I help you? Okay, going to Pasuk Yutes. Vayomer tenali bracha. She says, I want a bracha. Ki eretz ha-negev nesatani. Because you gave me the Negev. What's the Negev? South, dry, right? The dry land. It's very hot and dry. It's not very. There's no rain, right? There's no irrigation here. V'nasatali gulos mayim. So I'm asking for you, please, to give me some like wells, you know, springs of water. Va'itin la es gulos ilios ves gulos tachios. And Kalev said, okay, fine, no problem. I'll give you these things. I'll give you these springs, the upper springs and the lower springs. So, okay, so Pashup Shat, you read the Pesukim at face value, it's very interesting. You know, it seems like Devir was a difficult place to conquer. So he gave this motivation that, you'll take my daughter. And Osniel Ben Kenaz, who was Kalev's brother, took the challenge. He defeated Devir, Kiryat Sefer. He went and he married Achsa. His daughter, and now Achsa has this interesting request of a field, and then she kind of complains about the field that you gave me the land in the Negev. I need some springs, and then he gives her these springs. Okay. Just interestingly, in terms of the fact that the pasuk refers to Osniel before we get to Chazal, but how the pasuk refers to Osniel ben Kenaz as Achi Kalev, right? Now, Kalev was Kalev ben Yefuneh. Kalev ben Yefuneh. So how can we call Kalev ben Yefuneh and Osniel ben Kenaz brothers?
If
they have a different father. Oh, good. So the Radak says, according to one pshat, they were half-brothers. They had the same mother, but they had different fathers. Right? Kalev's father was Yefuneh, and Osniel's father was Kenaz, and that's why they had different fathers. He says another pshat, the Radak, and he says that maybe it's really referring to the same person, right? By the way, sometimes also Kalev is Kalev ben Yefuneh HaKnizi. He is referred to sometimes as Kalev ben Yefuneh HaKnizi, right? So the Radak says that maybe really it was the same person, and his name was really Yefuneh Kenaz. That was his name. So, perhaps, and for now you have to ask the question, so how come sometimes he was called Yefuneh and sometimes Kenaz? I'm not sure. But that was the suggestion. And the third suggestion the Radak says is that maybe they shared a father as well. Maybe the father's name was Yefuneh and the family name was Kenaz, which will explain why it's Kalev ben Yefuneh HaKnizi, right? And just here, so here it calls him Osniel ben Kenaz, referring to the family name. Okay, so be it as it may, whatever the case is, either they were half brothers, they were full brothers, whatever the father's name was. Okay,
Rabbi, there's a big question. How could Kalev promise his daughter away?
Yeah, yeah.
And that, what if the person that did conquer it? What if it was a slave? What if it was a person beneath them?
Interesting question.
Would he have still done it?
Right, interesting question. I don't know, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So Chazal have a whole different take, you know, Alpi Drush have a whole different take on this storyline here. And they say that this wasn't even so much about a physical battle for this place called Devir. And Chazal pick up on the fact that we're calling this Kiryat Sefer. Now, why are we calling this Kiryat Sefer? And Chazal say that there were a very large number of halachos. In some places it says 300, in some places it says 3,000. Either 300 or 3,000 halachos that were forgotten during the period of Avelus of Moshe. But keep in mind, Moshe was the one who was Kibbal Torah Mi-Sinai, right? Moshe got the Torah at Sinai, and he was the one who taught everyone the Torah. They didn't have, you know, nobody was recording Moshe's shiurim and putting them on YU Torah. Right? People weren't writing down what Moshe was teaching them. Everything was oral. It was oral tradition. So Moshe, you know, taught Yoshua. Yoshua taught this Canaan, etc., etc. As Pirkei Avos tells us. But when Moshe died, and especially it sounds like during the Avelus of Moshe, people were very distraught, and all of a sudden people began to forget. You know, they began to forget some of the halachos that Moshe Rabbeinu taught. So Chazal say that this what we're talking about here is that this place called Devir is really all a metaphor. It's all a metaphor for Kiryat Sefer. It's a metaphor for Sefer. Meaning this was something challenging. The challenge was not a physical challenge of conquering an actual city, but the spiritual challenge or the mental challenge of relearning, perhaps remembering, relearning, reteaching all these teachings of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that was really Kalev's challenge that he gave to the people. This wasn't a battle. This wasn't a physical fight. Kalev's challenge was, who's going to be the one to come and review and relearn and remind us of all of Moshe Rabbeinu's teachings that we've forgotten, right? And whoever does that will get my daughter Achsa as a wife, right?
Why was Kalev taking the lead on this and not Yeshua?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know. Right? Where's Yoshua? All of a sudden, you know, Yoshua's in the background. Yoshua's in the background. I don't know. That's a good question.
And also, why didn't Caleb take the city and himself?
Maybe not. Keep in mind, Caleb was not a young man right now, right? Even though we just learned, he says, I'm at full strength, right? Remember, we learned that Caleb was 85 at the time. You know, but he says, I'm at full strength. I can still do it. But we learned also, Yoshua's a little skeptical of his strength. Yoshua wasn't so sure that he was so capable. So maybe Kalev says, okay, I'm at full strength, but look, you know, so again, on the Pashup chat level, you know, look at this city, I'm not sure I could do this. You know, I might need more some of the younger, warriors to help out here. And in terms of if you go with the Chazal's understanding, Al Pi Drush, that we're not even talking about a physical battle here, we're talking about a spiritual, you know, mental battle of trying to remember and relearn and reteach Moshe's teachings, Kalev might say, listen, I can't remember them. You know, I can't remember these teachings. I need someone else to try to come and remember and reteach these things. So according to this was Othniel ben Kenaz. So it's interesting because you have these two different pictures of this man, Othniel ben Kenaz. According to the Pashup Shad in the Psukim, Othniel ben Kenaz is like a Navy SEAL. You know, he's a top warrior that's coming forward, you know, and conquering this incredibly fortified city that Kalev, you know, has trouble with. Othniel ben Kenaz comes forward. According to the Chazal's way of understanding it, he was a big Talmid Chacham. You know, he probably wasn't all that great of a warrior. Or maybe he was both. Maybe he was like a David HaMelech, right? He was a warrior and also a Talmid Chacham. So who knows? You know, there are stories throughout history of people who were able to do both. I think the most recent one that I can recall was Rav Gustman, Rav Yisrael Zev Gustman, who was he was a partisan during the war. He was a Talmud Chacham in Europe. And then the Nazis came in, Yimach Shemam, and they destroyed Jewry. And he became a partisan during the war, and he fought. And then after the war, he went back to the Beis Medrash. And he went back to learning and teaching Torah. So sometimes, when you have to fight, you have to fight. And when you have to learn, you have to learn. So I guess now in Eretz Yisrael, you know, in the Hezder Yeshivos, you have a similar framework. But oh yeah, that's right. You mentioned to me, right? Rav Gusman. So okay. So now, according to, again, if we're working with the rabbinic, you know, Chazal's ways of understanding these psukim, that this is all spiritual matters. We're trying to remember Moshe Rabbeinu's teachings. So Osniel is the one who comes along vayilkida. Osniel is the one who comes along and he conquers it. He meets the challenge. He's able to bring back all of Moshe Rabbeinu's teachings that the Bnei Yisrael had forgotten. Yoshua, Kalev, everybody had forgotten these teachings. And this guy, Osniel ben Kenaz, comes out of nowhere. And he's able to relearn and reteach all of these teachings. Amazing. So now, he gives, such a Talmud Chacham, a fitting shidduch for my daughter. So he gives Achsa, his daughter, to Osniel ben Kenaz as a wife. Okay? And now, according to the way Chazal understand this, the psukim make a lot of sense. Because what happens? She realizes, he gave me a great Talmud Chacham. That's nice. He's learning in Kolo. But what's going to be with the Parnassa? Right? What's going to be with Parnassa? So according to the Mepharshim, that's exactly what his daughter's worried about. You know, it's great. I'm so happy. She wasn't disappointed. She wasn't upset. She was very happy. Baruch Hashem, I have such a beautiful chassan. I have such a wonderful chassan who's a big Talmud Chacham, and he brought back all of Moshe Rabbeinu's teachings. But at the end of the day, you know, she came down and she wanted a sadeh. She asked for a sadeh. We have to have a means of making parnasa. So he said, of course, and he gave her the sadeh. And then pasuk yutes. So Chazal understand that what's he saying here? Tenali bracha, right? Give me a bracha. Question: What the bracha refers to? Some say the Rashi says the bracha is referring to parnasa. Some say the bracha means something additional here. But so what does she say? Ki eretz hanegev nesatani. You gave me dry land. You gave me a dry land. Meaning from a parnasa standpoint, right? From a ruchniya standpoint, it's gevaldik. It's amazing, right? You gave me a wonderful shidduch. From a parnasa standpoint, though, this is dry land. You know, I'm not going to be able to make a living here. With how am I going to support my family? You know, married to this Osniel ben Kenaz, he's learning all day. How am I going to be able to do that? So she said. She said. She came to her father. She came to her father, and she said, "V'nasatli gulos mayim." She says, "I need irrigation. You know, I need parnasa." So he gave her. He gave her a sod, and he gave her gulos ilios and gulos tachtios. You know, so this was the first kolal arrangement here of the father-in-law supporting his son-in-law in kolal. This was the first arrangement that we have here in Navi. It's interesting. The Al-Sheikh, you know, one of the later commentaries, but the Al-Sheikh asks, you know, according to Chazal, if you take this understanding, and again, we always say there's many panim, just like the Shivim panim la Torah, there's many different layers of understanding when it comes to Navi also. You have the Pashup Shana and you have the Drash. These are all different layers of understanding of the text. And the Al-Sheikh says, according to the way Chazal understand it, what's this doing here? You know, why do we need this here? In the middle of the whole story of conquering Eretz Yisrael, we have this story of the shidduch between Osniel and Achsa. You know, we have this whole story. So the Al-Sheikh says it's really to remind us of the importance of supporting Torah. That's what he says. And it's like the first commercial for Adopt a Kolo or something like that. But he says it's to remind us of the importance of supporting Torah. Here you had Osniel ben Kenaz, who was the real deal, right? He wasn't he wasn't wasting time during the day at the coffee machine. Osniel ben Kenaz was learning, and he was the one out of all the Jewish people. He was the one who brought back all the teachings of Moshe Rabbeinu. So you see the importance of Torah, the importance of maintaining this person, and that was what Kalev took upon himself. So it's a wonderful thing. Again, if we can do it. Sorry? No, this is not Chevron. This is not Kiryat Arba. That was a different story, right? That was Chevron and Kiryat Arba. This is Devir and Kiryat Sefer. Devir and Kiryat Sefer, exactly. Right. Okay, fine. So the so let's just jump to then after this story is done, which it ends at Pasuk at Pasuk Yutes, after Pasuk Yutes. So Pasuk Chaf goes on to discuss again the cities of Yehuda, different cities, the southern cities, and here interestingly, there are a few cities mentioned, and the Gemara in Gittin discusses these. I saw this also. This was quoted on the bottom. If you have the art scroll, this blue one. So they quote this. Gemara in Gittin on the bottom. But the Gemara in Gittin, if you look at the Pesukim, if you look at Pasuk Chav Beis, so the Pasuk says, V'kina v'dimona v'ad ada. So it mentions three cities, that these were three cities, southern cities in Yehuda's territory, Kina, Dimona, and Ad Ada. And later, if you fast forward a little bit to Pasuk Lamed Aleph, if you go to Pasuk Lamed Aleph, so there also there's a short little Pasuk of another three cities, Vitziklag, Umadmana, Visansana. These were the three additional cities. And then the next Pasuk in Pasuk Lamed Beis, so it mentions how many cities in total were there, Ulevos, Vishilchim, Ve'ayin, Ve'rimon, then an additional four cities, Kol Arim, Esrim, Vaseisha, Ve'chatzrehen. These were 29 cities that were the southern cities of Yehuda's territory. There were 29 cities. So the Mefarshim discussed the fact that the Pasuk Lamed Beis says that there were 29 cities, but if you count up all the cities, there seem to be a lot more. There seem to be 38 cities. Not 29. If you actually do the count, there's a lot more than 29 cities. And the Gemara in Gittin darshan some of these names that perhaps some of these were not actual cities, but some of these were actually included lidrush. They were included really to teach us lessons. And it's very interesting. The Gemara in Gittin mentions that first pasuk of in pasuk Chav Beis, v'kina v'dimona v'adada. So the Gemara says, you know, what do these three names mean? So one of the Amoraim in the Gemara says that it's coming to teach us a lesson. It's coming to teach us a lesson. Again, it's a play on the words. Kina, Dimona, and Ad-Ada. So listen to the Gemara. The Gemara says, Kol sheyesh lo kina, anyone who has jealousy. So it's a play on the word, on the name kina, right? This is kina, anyone who has jealousy. Al chaveiro v'domeim, anyone who's jealous of his friend. And his friend is silent, right? And that's a play on the word dimona. Right? The friend is silent. He doesn't. Okay, someone's jealous of me. He doesn't. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't. You know, he doesn't do anything about it. So then, shochein ade ad, the one who dwells forever, meaning the Ribono Shalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a play on the word ad ada, oselodin. Right? Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of this person. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of this person. And then also in pasuk lamed aleph. When we have Vitziklag Umad Mano Visan Sana, so the Gemara says a similar thing. Komi Sheyeshlo Tzakas Legima Al Chaveiro Vidomeim, that anyone who screams at his friend, right? That's from the language of again Vitziklag, right? A person who screams at his friend, Vidomeim Umad Mano, right, and he's silent. Shochein Bisne, San Sana, Shochein Bisne, the one who dwelled in the Sne. Referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So he will be Oselodin. He's going to take care of. He's going to take care of it. So again, the, you know, different lessons learned in the Gemara. I think the underlying lesson between all of these things is the importance of silence. That sometimes, you know, sometimes people push our buttons. You know, whether it's with jealousy, whether it's yelling or, you know, getting under our skin. You know, sometimes people know how to push our buttons and how to get us upset, how to get us angry, how to get us jealous. Whatever the case is, and our knee-jerk reaction is to respond, right? That's human beings. You know, we always want to respond. Somebody fires at us, we want to fire back. Somebody insults us, we want to insult them back. That's our knee-jerk reaction. But the Gemara is teaching us, based on these words, the Gemara is teaching us that really the best reaction is v'domein, right? And the best reaction is just to remain silent, not always to respond. Sometimes a response is necessary, but often it's much more productive, right, and less destructive if we don't respond. And we're just v'domeim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care, right? You don't have to worry. If a person did something wrong, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of him. But you don't have to lash out. You don't have to respond. If it's not going to be constructive and it's just going to be destructive, no reason for you to do that. Let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take care of it.
It's literally the same place, but it's an interesting coincidence that Dimona was where the secret nuclear warheads were.
Ah.
It was like silence. It was a secret.
Interesting. Domain. Very interesting. Very interesting. I don't know if that's why they chose that that location. Yeah.
Rabbi, it says here that before Moshe passed, he asked Yeshua if he had any questions.
Okay.
About the Torah and everything.
Uh-huh.
And Yeshua took offense and goes,
me?
Of course.
Right. And he was punished for that arrogance.
It was a great sin, and he lost his standing. And later on, he went to Hashem and said, please, tell me everything. And Hashem said,
right, that's the Gemara. The Gemara says that, right? Maybe a brachos. I don't remember. The Gemara says that somewhere. Yeah, very good. Okay, so let's skip now to the end of the perek. At the very end of the perek, this is the last pasuk actually in the perek. So the pasuk tells us the es hayivusi yoshvei Yerushalayim. So I mean, throughout the perek, we're not going to read the whole thing again, but we're going through the entire territory of Yehuda here, the lowlands of the territory, the mountain region of the wilderness. We're going through all the territory of Yehuda. Very last pasuk, Ves haYevusi Yoshve Yerushalayim. The Yevusi who dwelled in Yerushalayim, Lo Yachlu. And if you're looking at the Tanakh, you'll see that it's written Yuchlu, but it's read Yachlu. It's a Kri and a Ksiv. So the Ksiv is Yuchlu. The Kri, the way it's read, is Yachlu. Bnei Yehuda Lahorisha. Sounds like the Bnei Yehuda, the people of Yehuda, were not able to defeat the Yevusi. But excuse me, Vayeshiv haYevusi as Bnei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim ara yom hazeh. And Yoshua writes that the Yevusi stayed in Yerushalayim. They lived in Yerushalayim with the Bnei Yehuda until today. Ara yom hazeh, until today. So Rashi here quotes the Sifri that says that lo yachlu doesn't really mean that they were not able to. They were able to, but they were not permitted to defeat the Yevusi. They weren't allowed to defeat the Yevusi. They had to let them stay in Yerushalayim. Why? Because Avraham, back in Bereshis and Perek Chaf Aleph, made a promise to Avimelech. Avimelech asked him, I'm just reading the two psukim from Bereshis, Ve'ata hi shavali ve'lokim heina. Avimelech asks him, please Avraham, please swear, im tishkor li ulinini ulinechti, and don't lie to me, or linini ulinechti, or to my children, right, or grandchildren, perhaps great-grandchildren, kachesed asher asisi imecha, ta'asei imadi. Just like the kindness that I've extended to you, you please extend the same kindness to me, v'im ha'aretz asher gartaba, and the land in which you lived. Vayomer Avraham anochi eshaveya. Right? Ishaveh, I'm sorry. And Avram says, I'm going to swear. Right? And Avram swears, and he swears that he's going to take care of Avimelech's grandchildren, great-grandchildren, his descendants. He's going to take care of them. And the Mefarshim say, the Mefarshim, according to the Sifri says that the Yevusi here, these were the descendants of Avimelech. And this was a kiyum, this was a fulfillment of the promise that Avraham gave to Avi, that Avram made to Avimelech. Right, that he would take care of them, and that's why the Bnei Yehuda were not permitted. They were able to perhaps, but they were not permitted to defeat the Yevusi. An interesting question: why they're called the Yevusi here? So some say that we're not talking about the nation. Some say it was the nation was called Yevusi. Others say that it's not referring to a nation. These people were really Plishtim. It was really the Plishti nation. They were called Yevusi, perhaps. This is the whole question. Some say that the leader of this group was, his name was Yevus. So they called him Yevus. The others say that the neighborhood in which they lived, there was a big tower, and that tower was called Yevus. That's why they were called the Yevusi. yes, exactly, right, very good. Oh, so that's actually, the Radak points out, that's why you have the Kri and the Ksiv here. The Yuchlu and Yachlu. He says Yachlu means that right now they were not able to, right, but the ksiv is yuchlu, because in the future they also won't be able to drive them out until David HaMelech comes along, and he's the one who finally drives the Yevusi out of Yerushalayim. It's interesting. They say that by the time David got there, that there were no longer any direct descendants of Avimelech left. So I don't know exactly how this what happened, but I guess whatever the linini ulinechdi, that line had ended by the time David HaMelech came, which was why David HaMelech was actually able to drive them out of the land. It's interesting. Some say that they had plaques in Yerushalayim that had the Shavua written on them. You know, I guess maybe in their neighborhood they put up like these plaques in Yerushalayim that had the Shavua of Avram Tavi Melech to make sure that they would be safe and nobody would touch them. And it says, you know, when David and Mepharshim explained, when David HaMelech came and he saw there's no more linini ulanechdi, they're all gone. So David HaMelech removed the plaques, and then he drove him out. You know, so there's no time anymore for this. The it's interesting also that here the Mitzudas David points out that here we're talking about Yerushalayim, right? And we're talking about Yehuda, even though we know that part of Yerushalayim was in the Chelek of Binyamin. So he says, it's interesting, I actually just did a Gemara in Megillah that discusses this, but Yerushalayim was actually divided between Yehuda and Binyamin. right? And it's very a little strip, right? That went out from right. So both Shvatim had a chelek in this place. Okay, we have 2 minutes left, so let's Perek Tes Zayin. We're going to not read the Psukim inside. We're going to skip it inside because it's really just very technical and just the names of borders. Now we're going into Ephraim's, Ephraim's places. So we'll skip that. Let's go to Perek Yud Zayin. And there's really only three Psukim that I want to talk about in Perek Yud Zayin. We'll do it in 2 minutes, and then we'll finish. We'll pick up with Perek Yud Ches Mirtz Hashem next week. So at first, the first pasuk in Perek Yud Zayin, Vayhi Agorol Lemate Menashe. So Perek Tes Zayin, we discussed Ephraim, and now in Yud Zayin we're discussing Menashe. So the Gorol for the Shevet of Menashe, Kihu Bechor Yosef. Menashe was obviously the Bechor of Yosef. Lemachir Bechor Menashe, and the Bechor of Menashe was Machir. Right. So you have Yosef, his Bechor was Menashe. Menashe's Bechor was Machir. Avi Hagilad, Kihu Yaish Milchama Vayhilo Hagilad Vahabashan. So it's interesting. I never knew this, but the Radak points out that Reuven and Gad wanted the Eiver HaYarden because they had a lot of sheep, they had a lot of cattle, they needed a lot of grazing land. So that's why Reuven and Gad wanted Eiver HaYarden. What about the half of Shevet Menashe, the Chatzi Shevet Menashe? So I always assumed it was the same thing. And I think in the Torah it doesn't distinguish between them. But here, interestingly, the Radak points out that that half of Shevet Menashe that settled in Eiver HaYarden was actually led by Machir, who was the Bechor of Menashe, okay? And the Pasuk here says, Ki hu haya ish milchama, that he was a very powerful person. Machir was a powerful person, and it sounds like his family, and Gilad, it was his son, you know, they were very powerful, strong, you know, warrior-type family. And therefore, they wanted this land. This was like a dangerous territory almost. It was like Eiver HaYarden. This was like on the border of Eretz Yisrael and all the surrounding nations. So they, Dafka, wanted this territory because they were going to be like the protectors. So Reuven and Gad were farmers, you know, were shepherds. They wanted the grazing land. And the Chatzi Shevet Menashe, they were the warriors. And they said, you know what, put us here in Eiver HaYarden and we'll protect. We'll protect Reuven and Gad and we'll protect all the people from Eretz Yisrael to make sure nobody comes in who shouldn't be coming in. Very fascinating. I never understood this. But that's how the Radak understands it based on this Pasuk. And interestingly, why does the Pasuk here focus on the fact that Menashe was the Bechor? So the Mitzudas David points out, because really who should have gotten their land first? Menashe, because he was the Bechor. But who really got their land first? Ephraim. That was Pasuk Perek Tezayin was all about Ephraim's territory. Perek Yudzayin is Menashe's territory. So the Pasuk says here, Ki hua Bechor means despite the fact that he was the Bechor. Despite the fact that he was the Bechor, Ephraim went first. Why did Ephraim go first? Sikel as Yodav. Right? Because as we're going to read, right? This week's Parsha. That Yaakov switched his hands, so he gave the bracha to Ephraim. So this is the fulfillment, right? It's amazing that we're learning in Mamish this week. But this was the fulfillment of Yaakov's bracha that Ephraim got his share, his portion first, and then Menashe got his. Fast forward to Pasuk Yudal, just two more Pesukim, by Yadabru B'nai Yosef, Es Yehoshua Leimor. So the B'nai Yosef come to Yehoshua and they tell him, Madua Nasatali Chelek Nachla, I'm sorry, Nachla Goral Echad, the Chevel Echad, you gave me one little portion. The Bnei Yosef come to Yehoshua complaining. He gave me like one little portion. Vani Am Rav. I'm a big nation. Arasher Ad Ko Berchani Hashem. To the point of Ko Berchani Hashem. That Hashem blessed me with Ko. So Pashup Shat Rashi says Ad Ko. Ko means until now, right? Until you look at the number of people that we've amassed until now. He also says it alludes to the number Ko is 25. Right? Gematria is 25. So he says, if you look at the census, the first census of Yosef in the Midbar versus the second census as they're coming into Eretz Yisrael, that Yosef actually increased by 25,000 people. 25,000. It's one of the biggest increases in the Shvatim. So they were coming to complain to Yehoshua. You know, we had such a big increase. You know, we need more land. And some say also that it alludes to the bracha that Avram got of Ko Yehiyeh Zaracha. Right? Again, that Ko. And then finally, just taking a look at Pasuk Yud Ches, So basically, if you look at the Pesukim, we don't have time to read them in Tzar, but look at Tesvav, Tezayin, Yudzayin, Yehoshua basically tells them, listen, you're right, you are a big nation, so go up to the forest, you know, and you go up to the forest and, you know, cut down some trees, and you have plenty of land up there. You know, you have plenty of land, you have to do a little work. You have to do a little work to get your land. And then at the end, Pasuk Yud Ches, the Pasuk tells us, Ki har yihyeh loch, ki yarhu, it's a mountainous region, and it's a forest there, ubeireso, and you should cut it down, you should raise it, v'haya lecha totz osav, and all the results will be for you, ki sori shesaknani, ki rechav barzel lo, ki chazaku. So the Radak says that they were scared a little bit here, because the Knani lived in that area, and they were a little nervous. They had this Rechav Barzel, they had these powerful chariots, they had these big tanks, you know, and then the people of Bnei Yosef were scared. But Yehoshua was telling them, listen, you got to defeat them, right? You have to defeat them. And in fact, he says, if you don't defeat them, they're going to come back to haunt you. He says, if you don't drive them out now, you let them stay there, he said, they're going to come back to haunt you. So anyways, it's a good idea. Clear the forest, drive out the Kanani from here. This way they won't cause you any problems. And Ephraim actually joined in with Menashe here to defeat the Kanani. And they leveled this land, and they got this land, and that was their land. And Amir Tz Hashem, we'll pick up Amir Tz Hashem next week with Perek Yud Ches.